Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome as we bring you a special edition of Soul Treatment in a Raw. I'm your host, Michael Lewis Ingram, DJ Honeycomb, and as always, it is good to have you in the house. Soul Treatment Radio on the Raw, sponsored by the Black Athlete Sports Network and BASNNewsroom.com, home of the assassins of journalism. If you want the real who, what, when, where, why, and how, you can get it right now at www.BASNNewsroom.com. Shout out to our colleagues at 1450 WCLM Online. You can hear our Radio Reggie and crew doing Sports Plug every Saturday from noon to 1 p.m. We also want to give you some love from our man up in Buffalo, Pat Freeman, the Mighty Oba, who will be heading Super Bowl 52 and will be providing us with exclusive coverage next Wednesday for our Hump Day special. He works out of WUFO 1080 AM, The Mix, and 96.5 Power, and that's Power FM in good old Buffalo, New York. Shout out to our colleague Anthony Johnson, who is running for public office in the 180th District of Philadelphia. We will have Anthony on in a future show, and if you want to get a better insight on what makes him tick, check him out Saturday, 6 p.m. with the Anthony Johnson Show on Blog Talk. Sending love to our colleague Ricky Hampton Sr., who does the African American Athlete Saturdays. So check that. Tuesday evening, 10 p.m. Eastern. And, of course, our dynamic duo, Vespi Starbuck and Joey Savage with the Savage and Starbuck Show, Wednesdays, 9 Central, 10 Eastern. Brad and Shotgun with me as always. My main man, Tony McClain, T-Mac in the house, executive man, and the editor-in-chief emeritus of BASNNewsroom.com. What's up, T?
Well, we got a bunch of things here, and you know, for folks who listen to this, we're doing this because we are trying to test out our new YouTube page. So we're every day we seem to keep moving up in the world, much like the Vegas Knights. Although we're not making the financial impact, we'll get to that in a sec. But this is a demo for Soul Tree Radio. And for BASN Newsroom's YouTube page. And, you know, Mike, the elephant in the room, of course, this week is, you know, the upcoming Super Bowl and everything else. And, you know, anyone who's listened to our shows knows how we feel about the CAPs of Foxborough. And it's interesting because, you know, the article that we talked about on the Wednesday show in regards to how the NFL's ratings are just plummeting, literally. The other thing I wanted to add to that, one of the asides that the writer talked about, mm-hmm. almost like the NFL and their rights holders are just not going to say a word, because see, what got this whole thing started, at least with me, Mike, was because we were talking in general as we show prep, and what got me was after the first 2 weeks of the playoffs, you know, the wild card and the divisionals, usually that Monday afterwards, like clockwork, ratings were so and so and such and such and everything
That's true. You're right.
But all of a sudden, the NFL became, you know, Helen Keller and Marcel Marceau after the first two weekends of the and, you know, the NFL, you know, I checked, you know, the NFL media website, I checked whatever, mm-hmm. and there was literally nothing written or said about NFL ratings regarding the postseason. Now, we had always talked about how across the board the ratings have gone down 10% for most of the national games, but as we mm-hmm. reported last night from this other website, that the NFL has lost almost 20 to 30 billion viewers from last year just to this year. And I know our colleague Patrick Farrar said, you know, there's a lot of people that watch the games on a non-traditional basis now. And again, that's gonna seep into it. But 23 mil, Mike, that's huge. That's huge for the allegedly you know number one sport in North America.
This I'll say because I am familiar with the process, having covered 13 Super Bowls. When Roger Goodell does his State of the League address during Super Bowl week on Friday, he is essentially doing an investors meeting. Yeah,
exactly.
It's an investors meeting. He's like, "Well, folks, here's the deal. You know, we made goo gobs of money, and it went toward this, and our profit margin is this, and we can pat ourselves on the back. We'll take questions, but these questions are no longer open-ended, objective questions. They have handpicked who they want to ask questions, and they'll throw in a little silly one, like some 10-year-old kid asking some, you know, innocuous shit about something. But the bottom line in all of this is that they're trying to protect investor confidence. Let's not forget, the NFL wants to go international. They want to have a Super Bowl in Europe, preferably in Wembley Stadium. They want Ladbrokes, which is the big betting chain over in that side of the water, to be just as into American football as they are into the Premier League. You know, they want cash to flow, and they cannot come to the table light-footed, or rather with light pockets, and that's why there is no general information around. Now, Tony, you called this a long time ago because we saw this when baseball was getting its butt kicked. Even when they had prime time during the World Series on Sundays, football was still outdrawing them by a considerable margin. And like you just said here, they would not put their figures up as to what their national viewers count was. So we know Roger Goodell is riding dirty right now, and they're trying to hide the fact that they've been getting their hanies whooped, because it's not just all these other factors I indicated. We're also talking about the after effects of LaFleur Kaepernick, and the fact that there are many teams whose merchandising numbers have definitely gone down because many of them will not buy stuff anymore. For whatever warped reason having to do with Kaepernick kneeling or not kneeling, the NFL has compromised itself in not just that aspect, but also in the fact that they're putting a shitty product out for the fans. It doesn't look like football. It doesn't look like people getting clocked coming over the middle on a crossing pattern. It doesn't look like 3 yards in a cloud of dust or rock hard defense and bump and run. That's not the football we're seeing. And there are a lot of fans who are generational, who are telling their kids, "Boy, back in my day, they used to do this, this, and this." And it didn't matter to them because they were spending money on, you know, trying to get their fantasy teams right. But now it does matter. The product on the field is looking shaky. And that's why I made the aside yesterday that the Eagles have to win this game, because if somehow the Patriots win, it will severely compromise, in my humble, how the NFL is looked at, as whether it's a sport or sports entertainment, because it's a question they've never answered. And if it is sports entertainment, a lot of people have been taken for goo gobs of money.
There's a free, you know, if you're in the New York area, you know, you always hear the thing, you know, after the Jets lose their first game of the year, it's always, same old Jets. And see, you can't push the fans on same old Patriots right now because see, again, it's a three-headed beast. And of course, mainstream media misses the boat because they're putting all of this on the quote-unquote flag protest. And again,
right.
It's not a flag protest. It's protesting black men being killed by police. If you know, number one,
they don't even know
what the damn. It's you know, they can't even get that right. What the protest is all about. The protest isn't about the flag. You know, it's never been about the flag. But again, hey, don't let facts get in the way of a good story. But see,
oh no question
for me. for me, and I think for you and for a lot of quote-unquote old-school football fans, and even to a lesser extent some of the millennials, people, I think people just the style of play is just not fun anymore. I enjoy more watching some of the older games on YouTube or what have you, even just from 20 years ago. You know, not anything from the last, say, 10 years. And, you know, you've had a handful of decent games. But, you know, the fact that they're close, that they've come closer to arena football than it is regular football. And it's no knock on arena football, but I just, you know, look, when they liberalized the passing back in the 80s, we knew that there was going to be, you know, we knew it was more of just, you know, people want to see the ball in the air and everything like that. And I get it.
Right.
And I'm not going to lie, it is fun to watch at times. But the biggest problem that the NFL faces to me is the oversaturation of everything. The Thursday night games, the fantasy league aspect, where they are passing literally on every down. It's not, you know, and again, I try not to be the old guy in the barbershop, but damn it, I think I know it's not the football I was watching. You know, when I went back and I said, okay, you know, I'll watch the first round of the playoffs or whatever, and within 3 hours, I was reminded of why the hell I stayed away in the first place, Mike.
That's right. This is the bigger issue. That credibility thing really makes it puts a serious stain on this, because for those Patriots fans, and I use the word loosely, you know, the reason you catch hell in terms of what kind of team you back is because all the other dynasties earn theirs. And when we see the Steelers, even if you're not a Steelers fan, you can appreciate the fact that they built it up from the top, rather from the bottom, with the draft and getting that free agent here and there and all the other stuff. You know, the Steelers won it legit. You know, San Francisco during the Rice Montana days and later Steelers, they won it legit. You know, they won. They did everything that everybody was supposed to do, and they outperformed everyone. Even the damn Dallas Cowboys. You know, they won. You respect the fact that they won it on the field. Nobody outside of Patriots fans can respect what New England has done, because there's always been a cloud about it, as if they were playing 11 against 18 whenever New England stepped on the field, at least in the Tom Brady years.
Exactly. And see, it's funny because – I piggyback on the Cowboys, the Tom Landry Cowboys. You know, once Tom Landry stopped micromanaging the quarterback situation and allowed Roger Staubach to be the guy, that's when they became.
He didn't like
that's when
Staubach.
They
he liked
became,
Craig Morton.
Yes, that was the crazy thing, and even later on, he when it was Danny White versus Gary Hogeboom, he hesitated to start Hogeboom as well. But again, even with the Cowboys and whatever, and Lord knows I'm no, you know, I am no Cowboy apologist or fan or what have you. And being an old Houston Oiler fan, or former Houston Oiler fan, you know I have no love for those guys in Pittsburgh. You know, I mean, I still see Mike Renfro getting fucked out of a touchdown that could have cost them a chance to
He's
go to the Super Bowl.
Still waiting for the instant replay.
That's a whole other thing. But see, when you see, put it this way, I'll give an example in the AFC title game.
Right.
And it's bad enough that it was like, you know, one penalty for the Patriots, and I think it was like 12 or 13 for Jacksonville. Yeah. Even Don Shula, at his most ruthless, was never quite ruthless when he
That's
was
true.
Head of the competition committee. The, you know, the Dolphins, you know, the Dolphins didn't, you know, yes, the Dolphins had that period of the 70s where they dominated, but
right.
those, you know, for all, you know, for all the bad or goodwill that 70, especially the 72 team, because, you know,
mm-hmm.
for God's sakes, people forget they had to play the 72 AFC title game in Pittsburgh. They didn't even get a chance. I mean, the only undefeated team in freaking football history, they didn't even
mm-hmm.
get a chance to host the AFC championship game. But again, I say all that to say, you know, there was one penalty in particular with Jacksonville. You know, I'm not even going to get into the whole thing of, you know, holding can be called on every play or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
There was a play. It was a play in the game where they were up. Jacksonville, I think at the time was up 17 to 7, or they were about to. They could have gone up like 17-7 before
gotcha.
The half.
Mm-hmm.
And they completed another third down, and then the penalty winds up being delay of game. Now, I've watched enough football to know
that
when it's a delay the game, when it's a delay the game penalty, you don't let the play. You just stop the play right there.
You stop
why
the
would
play.
They allow,
that's exactly right.
Why would you allow them to finish that play, and then
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden, you know, it's literally like. Okay, we got to call something. Oh, delay a game. We'll call delay a game. And
it's true.
Yeah. And see again, with penalties, especially in football, it's not so much the accumulation, but when. Because
yes.
It's a, you know, football is a game of all sports really, but especially football because of the physical nature, it's a game of
right.
momentum. And you know, you take away somebody's momentum like that, it you know, you can kill a team because of that. You know, I've always felt, and I know our resident Raider fan Gary Norris Gray, a lot of times the Raiders got called penalties because they were the goddamn Raiders. You know, it was just
that's right.
We gonna call a penalty
mm-hmm.
on you because you're the Raiders. Yeah, you know, you probably don't. You know, it's almost like that driving while black. Well, yeah, I know you didn't do nothing, but I'm sure you.
Well, no,
did,
this,
so,
you know,
so,
but
you
you're
know.
Right. In this case, though, it's driving while silver and black because you're right.
Yeah,
this is more than just what the Raiders do, though. We know that long-standing vendetta between Al Davis and Pete Rozelle never died. You know, I mean, Al's in hell right now trying to stick a pitchfork up Pete's ass. You know, he was pissed. That he didn't get what he felt he deserved for brokering the merger between the AFL and the NFL. And he said so, and he remained pissed until the end of his days on this sphere of the mortal coil at the very least. So we know anything that was done against the Raiders, and you know he had to be, he ate the cat, the canary, he ate everything when Rozelle had to hand that trophy to him because he knew. Al at any time could have said, Pete, fuck off, you know, fuck you.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't happen, but, you know, he took the high road just so that he could gloat that much more. So, yes,
exactly.
There's always been that thing with the Raiders, but even then, the Raiders were respected when they won because we knew they had to beat some bad mofos to get there. I mean, the Tong Wars with them in Pittsburgh in the 70s was about, you know, the old Canadian guys will talk about old-time hockey. That was old-time football. Raiders
Remember, remember, that was part of that whole Rozelle versus Al Davis. Remember,
yeah.
they went to trial. Remember, you had Chuck Knoll saying that, you know, Atkinson and Tatum was part of a criminal element of the NFL. I mean, I was like, whoa, wait a minute. You know,
that was deep.
That's
right.
I mean,
of all the people.
That sounds like racial profiling to me as far as I'm concerned.
Think? I mean, look, we heard about how hard a hitter Larry Wilson was, and we heard about this guy Hardy, whatever his last name was back in the
day.
Hardest hitter. And, you know,
Pat Fisher.
So yeah, thank you. Couple of brothers. Are you kidding me? You know, I mean, listen, after what they did to Joe Gillum, I would be more apt to believe that there might be a hint of what you're talking about there. Meanwhile, Al Davis is making like Nino Brown back in Oakland.
Literally.
Orchestrating all this, you know, the opposing quarterback must go down within the first 10 plays, and he must go down hard. I mean, he just issued a contract to all quarterbacks that play against the Raiders. They took it as levity, but Al was serious about that shit.
Oh,
he was on that sideline.
Yeah.
Y'all get the fuck that boy up.
The sad thing is, I'm trying to figure out who is the pretty motherfucker for the Raiders, though. You know, I can't think of who it could be, but it'd be interesting to find out who Kareem
Akbar
was. The Kareem Akbar of who was the Kareem Akbar for the Raiders? But I digress. But we say all that to. And again, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I literally and figuratively have no respect for the Patriots dynasty.
Exactly.
I have no respect for, you know, what they've stood for, their arrogance, their whatever. And see, just on a football historic level, I want to try to compare them to somebody, but I really can't. I still don't know how good a coach Bill Belichick is. I give him credit as being a very good defensive coordinator back in the day, and to a lesser extent now. But those non Super Bowl years, or you know, he struggled defense. He struggled drafting defensive guys and maintaining a decent defense with a consistent.
That's exactly
defense.
Right. That's exactly right. You know, it's a shame to have to go back and review. But, you know, for all the Patriots fans out there that, you know, thumb their nose at all of this, let's remember, they were accused of cheating. And even though it didn't go to a court, per se, the league imposed a fine on them. Now, it was a light fine, but $750,000, you know, that would buy you and me several bags of groceries. But the fact they did charge them. $750,000, that's big cash. And
yes,
Earl Campbell, among other notables, said straight up that Belichick shouldn't coach in the league ever again, and that Kraft shouldn't be involved in the league at all. And they passed him off as being some old relic, and like, oh, yeah, Earl, you know, so Earl don't know what he's talking about. Earl knew exactly what he was talking about. You got busted with video evidence that Commissioner Goodell destroyed. Now think about that. Nothing to see here. You know, are you fucking kidding me? So what kind of credibility are you talking about? And let's not even go in the fact that Matt Ryan's a dead roach ass choked up a 25-point lead only to lose, and not only lose, gave Las Vegas the advantage because when the score was tied at the end of regulation, it was 56 points. That was the actual line. Now, whether they had separate lines for overtime, it doesn't even matter. The house, as they say, always wins. So the points that were made by those who had the over, you know that had to be light stuff compared to what they thought, because the Patriots gave everybody an impression that when they came on the field, you may as well pee in your pants because it's over. They can't have this anymore. If the league sees New England winning again, there'll be an even bigger drop. My humble opinion, there'll be even a bigger drop in fans because they'll know, just like WWE, is scripted. The shit is fixed. Why spend why spend that kind of money on this?
And notoriously, Patriots Super Bowls have been last-second affairs. If the Patriots are up big, like in the halftime or whatever – Then you know, again, you know, I said this last night, and I'm going to hold to it. I think this Super Bowl has all the makings of being either the lowest watched Super Bowl ever or the lowest watched one within the last 10 to 15 years, because the fans are speaking, and they're saying the emperor ain't only naked, but I can see, you know, I can see through the white meat at this point in time now with this team.
No
question. And they're getting tired. And again, they're getting tired of it. It's funny. We're saying all this, and we're talking about the WWE effect. Vince McMahon made it official today.
Yes.
That the XFL is coming back in 2020. And it was interesting. And, you know, of course, you know, the mainstream media poo-pooed it, saying, you know, what a joke and everything. But it was very interesting to hear McMahon say, you know, we're not gonna do what we did the first time.
Mm-hmm.
He's gonna own all the teams. But I think all of the wrestling shenanigans, like the wrestling type shenanigans,
they
that
won't
you
know.
Saw,
there will be none of that. No, there won't be any of that.
I think
there will be
and,
no
and
key
see,
meetings, I don't think.
Uh huh. I think. See, I may be crazy when I say this, but the league has a chance to. I'm not saying it's going to be bigger than the NFL. I'm not saying it's going to be better than the NFL, but I think it has the chance to be successful this time because, see, whether you like McMahon or not, McMahon knows mass audience, mass appeal.
Yes,
that's
he does.
The one thing. That's the
yes,
one thing
does.
That people have never given him credit for. You know, when I was a big wrestling fan, you know, back in the day, I don't watch as much as I used to, but that was must see TV. When he took those main events, not just the Friday night stuff, but when he would basically be sort of like the summer replacement for Saturday Night Live, genius.
Yes, he would.
Genius stuff. And people forget, they made buku bucks. They made great ratings. You know, there were great ratings. Now, I'm not sure how big their ratings are now. I mean, they still get a lot of big pay-per-views and everything like that. But I think he learned his lesson from XFL 1. I think XFL 2.0 is going to be a success. I really do.
I think it will too, because I think the lesson that he learned from XFL 1 was that wrestling fans are not necessarily football fans, and vice versa.
True.
So he's not going to have all the histrionics. And it's ironic we're saying this now, because this would be the 25th year of the USFL. And the USFL had a legitimate niche. They had a TV contract. They provided a pretty decent brand of football. And people like Nate Newton and Gary Clark and Kelvin Bryant and others, they came from the USFL to the NFL and had key roles and won championships for teams. So the talent pool was there to be picked from. And, of course, anything that would be more jobs for the brothers would surely be welcomed, although I know there were some stipulations that were included, like you cannot have a jail, you know, you can't have a prison sentence. So, obviously, cats who may have transgressed, they won't get a second chance there. But if Vince is going to run this and work this like the USFL, he is definitely going to get people's attention. Spring football will come back in a very righteous manner. And there will be talent there.
I never realized how much I really missed the USFL after watching some of the game, you know, because I went to a couple of them up, you know, I went to see the Jersey Generals, a couple of times. And the thing about it was, it was fun football and it was good football. And you know, like you said, it's not just the Hall of Famers, the Steve Youngs and the Jim Kellys. Mm-hmm. It was, like you said, it was these other, I don't want to call them role players, but like, you know, I always like to call them like foot soldiers, because with a football, you know, with any sport, you have your superstars, but you have those second tier guys that basically make it so that the front line guys do well. Because without them, you're not going to do well, especially football-wise. That's almost another factor as well in the NFL, because we've talked about it before in regards to how there are no more grizzled veterans anymore.
Exactly.
You look at, and we'll use the Patriots as an example. Brady is the grizzled veteran, so to speak. But after that, you know, basically Gronkowski is the next grizzled veteran. And Gronkowski's only been around like 6-7 years. And, you know, you don't see that. And see, to me, that's another factor in the why the NFL isn't there. And see,
yes,
because you talked about the guys, the quote-unquote, you know, that's had transgressions and whatever. Back in,
mm-hmm.
you know, I always go back to a quote that Howie Long said, you know, when he came to the Raiders, you know, out of Villanova, you had Ted Hendricks in one corner, you had
yep.
Art Schell in one corner,
Greg
you
Townsend,
had Matt Millen
mm-hmm.
in one corner, Greg Townsend
mm-hmm.
in one corner, and Bill Pickell in one corner. And the thing was, okay, here's what you do, rookie. Here's what you don't
mm-hmm.
do, rookie. And now you take a team, and let's take a team like the Browns. Someone, please. Who are the grizzled veterans for the – I mean, think about this. When you think about – for this incarnation of the Browns, basically
mm-hmm.
Josh Gordon, who hasn't played a fucking game in almost 2 years, is
mm-hmm.
their grizzled veteran or either a
Joe
Thomas.
And Joe Thomas. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And Joe Thomas
that's
is
it.
A young veteran. That's it.
That's true.
Even,
mm-hmm.
you know – And the thing about it, with so many, I mean, I was so shocked to see Terrence Newman, you know, Terrence Newman is just as good a cornerback as he was with the Cowboys. Terrible. So, but he's still getting an NFL paycheck. But
still playing.
He was
that's right.
He was the freaking grizzled veteran for the Jaguars. You know,
right?
Crazy. And to me,
I mean,
that reflects. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. It, to me,
mm-hmm.
that's a reflection of, again, why the NFL is not what it should be, not what it
exactly.
What it was. It's
mm-hmm.
it's just it's a whole cross the board thing, and for them to try to put it all on the whole Kaepernick thing just lets me
mm-hmm.
know, number one, how damn lazy these national reporters and local reporters
mm-hmm.
are.
That's
and
right.
it just lets
mm-hmm.
you know how they just don't get it. They don't, and the sad thing is, Mike, they don't want to get it.
No, they don't want to get it. But I think McMahon will succeed with this new version of the XFL because he's prepping properly. If they're going to go online in 2020, then that means he's got to set up databases for all of the teams that he's interested in, which means – back in the XFL, I believe they had, what, 8 teams or something like that? There were at least 8 teams. So you're talking 8 teams. Roster-wise, that's at least 500 players, roughly, considering taxi squads and stuff. So that's 500 more jobs on the player tip, maybe another 75 to 100 on the coach's tip. I mean, this is going to be something that will take a while. And I believe McMahon's only difficulty is going to be in getting the stadia. I don't see the NFL even having a chance to cock-block what he's going to do because he'll beat everybody to the punch, which is why he's got this 2-year jump on everybody. I think he'll go to places where, say, like Portland, you know, or other places that need an NFL team and begging for one, like San Antonio. All of this shit's going to come off. He's in a position to succeed now. Because the NFL really can't do nothing to stop them.
Yeah, yeah, and I again because he learned his lesson, and I think because it's you know he's not going to literally play around with this. It can happen. It can definitely it's definitely going to happen. I really do get that feeling that it's going to work its way. It's definitely going to work its way to their advantage. I'm not going to lie. You know, a good buddy of mine is the stepfather for Rodney McLeod Jr. And if nothing else,
okay.
I'd like to see the Eagles win for him. But I wanted to switch up subjects here while we are coming up against the time.
Sure.
I know we've probably already gone over our time, but also this week, Major League Baseball Hall of Fame voting came out.
Mm-hmm.
Vlad Guerrero, Chipper Jones, Jim Thome, and Trevor Hoffman all get in. Edgar Martinez just misses. Mike Mussina got a few more votes again this year.
Good picture.
And now Clemens and Bonds, the two elephants in the room, basically didn't, you know, their votes stayed sort of the same. There was people that thought that at some point they were going to quote unquote take them off probation, but of course, you know, the writers being the writers, you know, are still, you know, playing these mental games with them. But
right.
With that being said, again, you know, Vlad getting in, you know, should have happened last year. Tripper Jones, no problem. Tomei as well. Now, the only problem I have with Hoffman is, you know, now Mariano Rivera will probably get in next year. You know, the number one all time saves.
Mm-hmm.
Hoffman's number two. Now Lee Smith, number three all time, no longer on the ballot. The fact that a Trevor Hoffman is in and Lee Smith is not in is a travesty. The fact that guys like Bruce Sutter and Dennis Eckersley and Goose Gossage are in, and Lee Smith is not. Lee Smith was the all-time leading. Was when he retired, he was the all-time.
Mm-hmm.
He was baseball's all-time save leader when he retired. Now, yes, he's been surpassed since then, of course. You know, but the fact that he's not even that he was not even that he was off the ballot just speaks to me how ridiculous it's gotten in regards to the Hall of Fame. And in that same vein, Mike, you know, we always talk about the collaboration we did with our buddy, Dr. Fred Whitted, in regards to Four Quarters of Soul. And we talk about how there's the logjam with the Hall of Fames. And it's hard to say which logjam is worse. But it's, you know, the one with baseball seems to get worse and worse and worse every year. And even though this is a good class of four, you got a chance of getting maybe three or four more next year, there's still a long way to go.
Exactly. And it seems that the levels get loftier and more snobbish with each year. Because these assholes who continue to be so-called protectors of the game get their panties in a twist whenever somebody does not smile on cue. Now, I thought that Vlad Guerrero was an interesting exception here because Vlad, if ever, spoke English. I mean, he always spoke Spanish, and you brought up something interesting as we were off air. Vlad started out with the Montreal Expos, played 8 years there, only played 6 years with the Angels, but he's going to go in as an Angel.
As an Angel,
and I think that's cool, but it's, a lot of it has to also do with the fact that the Angel ownership was also Latino, and they understood Vlad in a way that he appreciated that. And unless Vlad was doing stuff on Latin TV, which he surely could have done, you know, he was never subjected to the same kind of nonsense that other athletes were. I don't think Vlad was looking to be accepted or loved like, say, Alex Rodriguez was. So he didn't have to do anything. He just went on ahead. So I'm here to play baseball. This is my job. And he did that. I think Vlad was more like a modern version of Roberto Clemente in his approach to the game, you know, and how he went about what he did. And you got to remember, when the Expos started out, you know, they were in Canada and in French-speaking Canada, so it's a whole different situation in trying to endear yourself to the area. The only one I know from that core Expos, Valentine Carter, et al., Warren Cromartie was the only one who took it upon himself to ingratiate himself to the culture, learn to speak French, and was doing commercials for the Expos and many other things. All the other cats, except for Carter, you know, they were like they could take him or leave him. And Andre Dawson, of course, the Hawk.
Yeah,
But Vlad, when he left and went to the Angels, everybody got a chance to see how good he was. And he didn't have to speak. His bat didn't talk. So
literally and figuratively.
Yeah. So even the writers couldn't cause drama with his selection because they didn't know. And they didn't want to know. None of these writers, none of these Anglos went to Vlad to ask him what it was like to hit with a 2-2 count and then on base as opposed to with the bases empty. You know, now maybe they did again with Latin TV, but they didn't do that with Vlad. So Vlad was winning just by the fact that he didn't have to deal with as much crap as others did because they simply wouldn't approach him.
And see, the one thing that I think that's always been taken for granted, especially with the Latino ball players, is the immense pride that they play the game with. They take their, you know, this is their craft. You know, again, Clemente had played almost an entire generation before he finally got his due in the 71 World Series. Remember, he was the link to the 1960 championship and the 1971 championship because he was on both teams.
Right.
And
he,
along the way, there were batting titles, MVP awards, a bunch of all-star games, a bunch of gold gloves or what have you, but they always painted him as this Spanish hypochondriac instead of respecting what kind of play. And again, he probably caught a lot of whatever because he was in the era of Gibson and Mays and Mantle and what have you. But still, you know, when you're a great ball player, it shouldn't matter where you play. You know, I've always felt like that was a cop out when they said, "Well, if he played in New York or if he played in whatever."
Of course it was a cop-out.
I mean, because my thing would have been, so basically, you would have ignored you did ignore Hank Aaron, but you would have ignored him even more so. Because he played in Milwaukee and Atlanta. I mean, what does that say? You know, again, it speaks to the damn laziness and the inward xenophobia in regards to mainstream media from within the United States.
No question. And let's remember this. Clemente was darker than everybody.
Exactly.
Matter of fact, Clemente and Rico Carty were the blackest players in baseball
for a while. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, you ain't kidding. And you know, many of the Latins did not respect the fact that Clemente was dark-skinned. He had to deal with that crap on top of the other crap from being black.
He always said, "I'm a double nigga. I'm black and I'm Hispanic," and that's how they and that's how he felt like he was always treated. You know?
Yeah. And one other thing that Roberto Clemente did for baseball that we don't give a lot of credit for, he and everything he did in baseball allowed Latino players to stretch out in aspects of appreciating their overall game. Like, black players were stars. Black players knew they were stars because that's the only way they knew they would get on the roster. Latino players, their skills and the X factor that they would provide, all those components, they were allowed to expand on those. You know, we always talk about how great a shortstop Omar Vizquel was and his glove, but he did other things that were amazing. You know, Aparicio was appreciated in the 50s, but he was considered all-field, no hit. You have guys who played in our time, like Edgar Renteria and Orlando Cabrera, who always made their teams better. Now, the white writers wouldn't talk about it, but we would see it. We would see how you add Orlando Cabrera to a stretch run, you know, your team was going to end up in the postseason. Edgar Renteria, he's got, I think, at least two rings, you know, because he was there and he made his teams better. You know, all of that comes from Roberto. You know, there were no black players that we could appreciate being great utility players. We know they exist, but no, none of those.
Yeah. It's interesting because, see, you know, everybody talks about, you know, when Chipper Jones, you know, got in, he was saying, "Oh, another one of those great Braves guys that got in." And it made me think, you know, well, where's the love for Andrew Jones? You know,
yeah.
Where's
Thank
and
you.
See
Ralph Garr.
And exactly. Well, see, one guy in particular who's now going to be off the ballot, Johan Santana. Now all the years we kept on hearing, well, if you were the best of your position for like a 5-year period, you know, that should make you a Hall of Fame pitcher. Now, yes, he did pitch with the Mets briefly, and I'm a Met fan, but see, remember, he was a dominant pitcher for the Twins he got to New York. Now, unfortunately, you know, he wound up having the injuries and everything like that. But, again, it's just collective memory loss because, you know, the one thing I hate leading up to a Hall of Fame week is that you'll have these – generic articles that will come out about certain players or what have you. Now, I mentioned this last night. You know, they were trying to push the case for Scott Rolen to be a Hall of Famer.
That's a hell of a push. That's
and
like
again,
sisters
Scott
trying Rolen. To push that rock uphill.
Exactly. Now, Scott Rolen was a decent ball player, but come on. The only Hall of Fame, the only time he's going to go to the Hall of Fame is if he gets tickets to go there. But Johan Santana, 2-time Cy Young Award winner, was clearly the best pitcher in the American League of his during that 5 years. But here's how they – see, again, it's the old adage of how they do the Hispanic players. You know, he talked about how he was dominant for 5 years – but it wasn't like a Sandy Koufax sort of dominance for a five. See, they always see with baseball, they always have to have their great white fathers or their
right.
great white hopes
well,
to shove them.
They got
and
great
again,
white hopes protecting them.
Exactly.
You know, the writers, their job is to keep the game as white as they possibly can. And even though the movie The Natural didn't depict truthfully what happened to Roy Hobbs, the point of the writer being as nosy as he was and trying to get all in their personal business, it was factual in that regard, that if you weren't one of their guys, they were going to hassle you forever, forever, amen. So that pattern has never stopped. And until these old farts change the process, which is less likely to happen, it's going to stay that way. And a lot of cats won't get their roses until they're dead. And, of course, then they won't be able to smell them.
And see, what's even worse now, to me, the younger version, the younger guys now, it's all about analytics. And they'll they're going to analytics somebody.
Emphasis on anal.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we talked about, you know, Richie Allen. And see, guys like Richie Allen, guys like Lee Smith, guys like
Gil
Dave
Hodges.
Parker, Gil Hodges, Kurt Flood, you know, we've been talking about Kurt Flood being in there for years. And, you know, we had one of our colleagues years ago come on and basically try to say that because of that error he made in the 68 World Series, that should keep him out. That's going to keep him out. And, you know, I respect the guy.
Fortunately, he's in rehab now.
Yeah, really.
He was on drugs when he said that shit.
Yeah, I guess, he had to be. But see, here's the rub. There will be more people that will try to get Marvin Miller in instead of Kurt Flood. But if you know the whole Kurt Flood story, Marvin Miller, when Kurt Flood came to Marvin Miller about that, he said, "This is baseless. You're not going to win. He poo-pooed it, but Marvin Miller thrived because of it. Because eventually it led to, dare I say it, the two white pitchers, McNally
Messersmith.
And Andy Messersmith, to take it to court, and they wound up winning. But again,
they got paid.
If not for Kurt Flood, you know, being, you know, opening the door, Messersmith and McNally wouldn't have gotten what they, you know, maybe they would have.
Everybody.
I don't think they wouldn't have.
Every athlete in any professional team sport should have been a collective kitty for Kurt Flood. And everybody, and I mean everybody, should have thrown something shamelessly into the pot in order to say thank you because they would not be making these ridiculous salaries if it were not for Flood's courage. He took a hit for everyone. And anybody that doesn't understand that is way the fuck off base, and they're not going to come around and slide home. Taking a gamble on that kind of knowledge would be, well, impossible. But speaking of gambles, that was a bad segue. Forget my bad segue, but speaking of gambles.
No problem.
The one sure thing that seems to be rocking the house in the world of sports right now are the Vegas Golden Knights. Say that shit again.
Oh, man.
The Vegas Golden Knights, the expansion team that was slapped together with maybe a piece here and a piece there, is leading their division, and they have won as many games as any expansion franchise in their sport has. And we're not even at the all-star break yet. There are a lot of people to give credit for, but the only people that are really upset inside of Vegas, according to you, my friend, is the bookmakers.
Boy, you almost feel sorry for them, but again, it's a perfect example of be careful what you wish for, because it literally and figuratively may come through. And what's basically happening is, you know, you've got we already talked about how Vegas took a hit because of I'm just trying to call up the story here while we're talking, but we already know that Vegas is taking a hit because of the bombasticness of DraftKings.com and FanDuel. And slowly but surely, they had been trying to get that money back this year in the NFL. But on the other end, they are getting it literally and figuratively from the Vegas Knights. And, you know, as we all know, Vegas is the one sport in, you know, it's the one, you know, city in America where you can bet legally. So just to paint the scenario, and again, this is an article from ESPN.com, a $100 wager on every Knights home game for the 17-18 season would net a better $1,395.
Wow.
Right now.
Wow.
Local properties are booking between 10 and 15 times the handle on Golden Knight home games than for any other NHL club. Now, that number increases during the game as fans can bet from their seats on mobile devices. And in total, the handle represents the equivalent of an average NFL game, which is usually in the six-figure neighborhood for each sport. And I'm quoting the sports books director, Tony Miller, from Golden Nugget. When the Chicago Blackhawks came to town, my handle on that one game was more than the entire Stanley Cup final last year. It's a good thing that they're betting on other games, but, man, it's to a point where it's a love-hate relationship. Now, also, to piggyback on what Mike was saying, the Knights have already surpassed their preseason over-under of 26.5 wins. They did that on January 2nd. Now, they're scheduled to play the New York Islanders as we speak within the next half hour or so. They can go over that projected season point total with that game. Now, that unexpected run has collectively cost sportsbooks well over $1 million combined, and the damage is even more significant if you factor in adjoining parlays. And this is my favorite quote. According to Westgate Las Vegas Superbooks oddmaker and manager John Murray, the betting public has found a new ATM, and it's called the Golden Damn Knights.
Now, even though they're catching hell right now, they are licking their chops because they are making some major coin tea, and the NFL hasn't even knocked on the door yet. They know they're coming, and you know, in spite of all the other stuff that's been going on during football season, they're looking at this, and even though they may be a bunch, based on how they react to Kaepernick, they may be a bunch of craven cowards. But we know there's some greedy little craven cowards.
Yeah.
And they can't wait to get in there, and they can't wait to get in there and get some of that money, because Vegas is showing them that the product is good. And I'm sure as this information further comes out, you will also have Canadians coming down trying to hit Vegas as hard as they can, because 19-2-2 at home is something nobody figured. And knowing that we have the kind of degenerate gamblers that we do have, there may have been somebody, anybody, who put $100 on Vegas as a lark to see if they get to the Stanley Cup final, or even to win the Pacific Division. If they did that at 200-1, do the math, ding, 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 200K.
Well, see, again, to piggyback for the article, most of the sports books in Vegas are now carrying liability on the Stanley Cup wagers for the night. And some of those bets, some of the bets have ranged from as 300-1 to 500-1. And also, some of the bettors have also backed them to win the Pacific Division, as you said, at 200-1 odds. But, you know, and again, this is another quote from, this is the MGM's vice president of race and sports, Jay Rude. I figured the tickets were souvenirs. This was citing the popularity of saving the evidence of preposterous wagers to share with your friends. It's probably the most liable of any team we've had here during my 10 years here. And, I mean, if they, you know, basically, if the Knights were literally to go all the way and win the Stanley Cup, you're talking about upwards as possible 6- or 7-figure losses to sports books out there in Vegas. And Lord knows, you know they did not see. I mean, see where FanDuel and DraftKings messed up. They guaranteed, you know, they would go on TV and say, we guarantee you X amount of money we're going to pay out. And Vegas was just like, what the hell did they just say? They guarantee what?
Exactly.
They didn't guarantee. Vegas, this was a lark. Matter of fact, many hockey purists were laughing because they're like, why? I mean, if it wasn't for the fact that they had 13,000 season ticket holders up front for a 15,000-seat arena, people would have looked away at Vegas. But see, they're not only a success on the court. They're not now. I mean, literally, like we said, the house always wins, but the house is getting their ass kicked at this point in time right now.
Well, when you look at how the team was put together, normally, when expansion teams were thrown together, they were leftovers from everybody's other stuff. And, you know, the people made a group draft and they took what they could from the expansion pool. There were some exceptional pieces that they had there. They had people who were unproven because they hadn't gotten a lot of time, like Tuck, number 89, Marchessault, who was number 81 in the winger. He was a 30-goal scorer in Florida. You know, who gives away a 30-goal scorer? So there were a lot of things that they thought, because they were going to throw it into this pool here in Vegas, that, you know, by the time the trade deadline comes, and the NHL has a very liberal trade policy, they're not trading anybody. Now the Vegas Knights are thinking about, if they do trade, they're going to acquire something rather than get something else. For a first-year team to do that, that is unheard of. So Vegas is setting all kinds of precedents here, and while the fans may love them and the bookmakers may hate them, all they've done is facilitate for every other league to get in here and open the door to get paid.
Yeah, it's this is, you know, the final chapter on this. Again, needless to say, as our buddy Robert Qualls like to say, stay tuned, because the final chapter on this has yet to be written, because this is going to be an ongoing thing. You know, I try not to, you know, put the conspiracy theory hat on that much, but if all of a sudden they go into a tailspin, I'm I'm betting, yeah, pun intended, that this is you know, that someone said these guys are gonna start, you know, I'm gonna be eating ramen noodles if these guys, you know, win the Stanley Cup. You know, you guys gotta do something for me. You know, something's gotta give here. And when you realize the power that Vegas betting still has in professional sports, you know, it wouldn't surprise you at all.
Yep. Let's leave it there for now and let everybody know you can hear Soul Tree Radio in the Raw 3 times weekly, Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. with the Hump Day Special, our flagship show going into our 6th year, 2 p.m. every Saturday afternoon, and for music and balance, Music Therapy Mind Stream, 9 p.m. Sundays. And again, we are sponsored by the Black Athlete Sports Network, BASNNewsroom.com, WCLM Online, and our newest sponsor, Chocolat et Clam Lingerie. We have a great promotional effort by their Chief Financial Officer, B. Hall, Saturday on the flagship Saturday Stir Fry around 2:30. And she's going to be offering some goodies for all you guys out there and some of you ladies who want to make sure that everything stays right in the house and get you out the doghouse kit that you will definitely go for. And Lady B will be here Saturday to talk about it all, and you'll hear more information about that this Saturday. On behalf of my colleague Tony McLean and everybody else out there, all our chefs who are wise on assignment, the kitchen is closed. Good night.
BlackAthlete.com.
Light through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Light through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat.
Now we got the spirit that can never give in, with a heart that pumps stronger than 10 average men. It's something within, I was born to win. You can't hold me down, I'm a black champion. We had to fight for equal rights, on and off the court, and at the turn of the century, dominated sports for the love of the game. Endured the pain and fought through segregation, had to make a change. Jackie Robinson, first black man to get a deal in the major league, knocking home runs out the field. Led the whole lead in RBIs and steals in his first year, MVP Rookie of the Year. Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, and Minnie Minosa paved the way for Reggie Jackson, Ken Griffey, and Sammy Sosa. Half of all MVPs in the history of baseball's been black athletes. That's why we excel in all our feats, cause we so deep, mentally, physically, and spiritually. So all I wanna do is thank my God, we worked so hard, came so far, black athletes, superstars.
Light through the eyes of a black athlete,